Hello.
Ken.
Hey, buddy.
How are you doing?
Good, pal. It's great to hear your voice.
It's great to hear you, too.
We're going to discuss the nature of mind and just use that as sort of a starting point to riff on art and spirituality, art and creativity, art and transformation, art and existence.
Super. Okay.
Cool. I want to just go over a couple of things by way kind of a background, if you will. And one is, which I've always been just struck by, is as far as you can tell, the recollection of your first memory. And because it seems to encompass in its own sort of strange, compressed way, so many of the themes that your art would touch on in later years. And it's a remarkable experience, a remarkable memory. You know what I'm talking about, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about it. Give us a little summary of that.
Well, what does one say about memories that that precede verbal or conceptual knowledge?
Right.
The imagery, I guess, is a very deep and perhaps pre-verbal kind of message system.
Right.
And the experiences that happen, it's hard to pinpoint exactly where they were, but the first thing I do remember was being immersed or suffused with a kind of peaceful white light.
Right.
Just brought a sense of peacefulness and freedom.
Right.
And, you know, nothing wrong.
Right.
And one of those rare kinds of senses of supreme happiness and bliss and an ecstatic, effulgent light.
Right. Right.
And then at the edges or the periphery of this sort of white light, there would come a kind of snaggle-branched, wiggly, dark energy. Like if
right.
you've ever seen a trash can full of maggots or something,
right.
it had a swarmy and smarmy and sickening kind of feeling attached to it.
Yeah.
And it would obliterate. It would just kind of creep in and then wipe out the light.
Right.
And it was really kind of like psychic texture. And
yeah.
then, you know, after, I'm sure I was screaming with fright by that time as an infant.
Yeah.
No one knowing, you know, whoa, what's wrong? He's teething or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, then, you know, little pockets of light would come back and slowly kind of obliterate the darkness, and
right.
I'd be back to a smoother sailing kind of thing. And I suppose just as feelings go, you know, there's a good feeling and then there's a bad feeling, and and the oscillation between those polarities kind of did, maybe it kind of that's something in my psyche.
Right. And it's hard to know whether this was kind of like, you know, an idiosyncratic experience that you had that was just, you know, Alex Gray's own particular experience of perinatal birth matrices or something like that, or, which I happen to believe, whether it was actually an early, initial, and profound actual perception into the nature of reality itself, and into the nature of dualistic manifestation. And that as many great artists, you were just, you know, very, very sensitive in your perception of the subtleties of the world. And part of what your art was about, was conveying these subtle but fundamental aspects of reality. And this dualistic, this yin-yang, you know, experience wasn't just, you know, some, you know, bad teething or lousy crop of breast milk that morning or something, but was actually, you know, an early, direct, real perception into some of the fundamental realities of the manifest world. And that perception and that understanding that that's what reality is made of was part of what drove your art, and not the other way around. In other words, your art didn't create these dualities. It expressed them.
Yes. I would say that, you know, whatever was felt to be the foundation or the ground of your creative source, that was it for me. And earliest work then started to reflect a interest in polarities and certainly mortality and early stuff.
Well, and early, people should understand you have things like, I think it's called the skeleton, which you did when you were 5 years old. And this is a very sophisticated drawing, essentially, of a human skeleton. You're already exploring these dimensions of reality at, you know, very early age.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. It's interesting that the head, I've noticed in recent years, the size of the head is somewhat more related to a five-year-old's anatomy as well, just the scale of those kinds of things. So I don't know. In the mission of art, I kind of take those early drawings and look at, okay, well, here I was obviously at a more magical level. And so I have a little power animal, maybe a little raven on the shoulder or something.
Right.
And then about 5 years later, I'm still working with the same subject, but it's become more mythic. I've got a picture of a grim reaper from about age 10.
Right.
And then still looking at mortality, I guess, if you go on to a little more rational. I started maybe 5 or 7 years later. I was doing rational dissections of the anatomy for art school.
Right.
And then it kind of moves into the more, a higher context for the skeleton in a more subtle anatomy and various other kinds of elements and stuff in the kind of praying or something like that. And then you go to dying, and you've got the same subject of mortality, I suppose, but then from another perspective and pointing to a more transcendental ground.
Right.
Your work has helped me to understand my work profoundly.
Yeah. It's an extraordinary corpus of work that you've done. And again, it really is fascinating how you can, you know, trace your growth and development, your evolution, your transformation in the artwork, the way you were expressing it, as you were saying, and moving through mortality and at age 5 having kind of a magic view of it. The Grim Reaper is a very solid sort of mythic complexity and very, very impressive, I have to say. Same with the graveyard study. And then you, as you say, you start to move into more rational types of paintings with studies of anatomy, and those sort of occupied you on and off for several years. And as you got more into specifically transcendental or spiritual themes, you started actually doing spiritual anatomy. And it's sort of one of the most striking things, I think, that people remember about your work is that it's like you draw the gross body, but you also draw the subtle and causal energies that all together make up the spectrum of matter energy that a human being is. And then behind all of this, there still is ongoing exploration of duality and of the nature of life and death and what that means in your painting, I believe, called Pulling Apart. This is when you're 18. This is a perfect sort of Jekyll and Hyde kind of, almost archetypal painting of the sort of normal, more conventional, rational self, and then a shadowy side, a dual self, and very powerful, and gets the point across in a very compelling fashion. And all of that would kind of continued until, I suppose, one of the major turning points was when you and Allison had that sacramental experience, out of which the universal mind lattice came. And that is one of the most striking of the paintings that you've done, and certainly one of the most non-dual, in the sense that it's uniting emptiness and form, and showing the essential inseparability of all of the manifestations of the world arising from universal mind. And by this point, you're very much into spiritual explorations and some experiments with psychedelics, but also genuine and deep study of several of the world's religions, and in particular, eventually, Dzogchen, which is Dzogchen Mahaati, which is the highest of the Buddha's teachings, and is a large part of the foundation, the ground of the nature of mind.
Yes. The universal mind lattice, just to go back there, if there's anything that kind of shifted me beyond meeting Allison and beyond my first, sort of taste of the mystical experience, that was the one that fully convinced me that something was going on that I had no idea about. And it was so bizarre, just as an experience, and so kind of unprecedented, even though it was, psychedelics, so practically anything can happen in that context,
right.
I suppose.
Right.
But fortunately, I was lying in bed next to my beloved, and so the context, became a loving relationship, basically.
Right.
And the love that we had for each other, I think, was the healing and sort of the foundation was love.
Right.
For what we were going through. And so it infinitized love, because practically, psychedelic experience can infinitize anything. And
right.
So if you're feeling alone and that, you're in a hell realm, oh boy, it's the absolute worst that it could be. But if you're also, likewise, if you're in a heavenly setting and it's possible, though not in any way guaranteed,
right,
in any way, it can go infinitely heavenly and infinite love. And at this particular instance, it did.
Right.
And we physically apparently dissolved, not really, I'm sure, I'm sure we were just sitting there breathing.
Yeah.
But our consciousness had somehow dissolved into this new identity that was infinite and omnidirectional and
right,
connected with every other being and thing.
Right.
And that was after that experience, and since Allison had the exact same experience, which, you know, thoroughly freaked me out further.
Yeah, because you're sitting there with your eyes closed going through this experience. You have no idea what's happening with her. It turns out afterwards you discuss it, and it's just pretty much item for item. She's having the same experience that you are, and there's
weird.
No way to, you know, you communicated this. So this is a you know, extraordinary, powerful, and pretty amazing event.
Well, it changed both of our artwork.
Yeah.
And changed probably our orientation to our lives to the point, you know, that it's still influencing
right.
You know, everything that we're doing. You know,
right.
It's kind of the universal mind lattice painting became what I think of almost as the pillar of the sacred mirrors, you know,
right.
Just as an insight.
Right.
And it's unusual because in most of my work is figurative, and this work, and you know, widely felt by many people who like my work, is that this is like one of the most important pieces. It has absolutely no figure at all.
Yeah,
and it's just the subtle energetic kind of soul net or something, you know, that.
Right.
So. I don't know. These visions lay the foundation for what comes later,
right.
Certainly.
Right. Well, what's so interesting is that if you look at the traditions and the way they describe creation, and with the understanding that it's really something that is either extremely difficult or just flat out impossible to describe in conventional ordinary language, because ordinary language, every concept makes sense only in terms of its opposite. So pleasure makes sense only because of pain, light makes sense only because of darkness, up makes sense only because of down, in because of out, etc. And yet with primordial, ultimate spiritual realities, these are non-dual. So they can't really be captured in words or any sort of explanatory dimension like that. And so one of the things that is so striking about your work is that in depicting, say, some of the subtle energies along with gross energies and causal energies, you're sort of giving a pictorial overview of manifestation that can't really itself be well or easily described any other way. And so what people are so struck by is, in addition to sort of often including a kind of Gray's Anatomy foundation, then there's a subtle Gray's Anatomy and a causal Gray's Anatomy. And this is representing gross, subtle, and causal realms of existence in the upper right quadrant, which means the actual matter or energy of manifestation. And those correspond in the upper left quadrant to particular states of consciousness. And these states of consciousness can't as easily be depicted, because it's like, how can you paint love? Or how can you paint mutual understanding? Or how can you paint compassion? It's much more difficult to do that. But it's a little bit easier to paint the corresponding matter energy that goes with those states of consciousness. So the states of energy, there's a spectrum of matter energy that goes with the spectrum of consciousness. And by plugging in to that spectrum of energy and including that in much of the artwork that you do, particularly the paintings, people can often have the correlative state of consciousness evoked in them. Because that's one of the things that we find that happens with artifacts, is that artifacts themselves don't have consciousness. So if I paint my mother, the painting itself isn't aware of what's going on around it, or the painting of my mother isn't aware of what's going on around it. The form, the pattern that the painting has is imposed on it by the sentient being that created the artifact. So whatever state of mind I have when I'm painting my mother is going to be imprinted in that painting. And then individuals who come along and see the artifact are going to tend to have the same state of consciousness evoked from that material artifact that went in to creating the material artifact.
It's an amazing aesthetic phenomena. It's like psychometry or something.
It is.
The reading of objects and the kind of gentle zapping that happens when somebody locks in on an artifact and really is able to get a good download.
Right. You know. Right. So that's what's so really truly fascinating about artifacts, is that they do tend to carry the resonance, the state of consciousness, the energy that was put into the artifact when it was created by the particular sentient being or group of sentient beings. And we find this across the board. We can look at architecture, and it will give us a sense of awareness, a sense of meaning, a felt sense, a state of consciousness. And, of course, that will vary dramatically from whether we're looking at a teepee to whether we're looking at Notre Dame to whether we're looking at something Walter Gropius did. Yes, exactly. And so one of the things that makes your art so important is that for the spectrum of matter energy in the upper right quadrant, you don't draw on just gross matter energy. You also draw on subtle and causal matter energy. So you get this complete spectrum of existence across the board, from the very lowest types of matter energy that are represented by the standard four main forces of physics, strong, weak, nuclear, electromagnetic, and gravitational. But then there's a whole spectrum of subtle energies. There's the subtle energy that starts when life first emerges, and that's often called etheric energy. And then as life gets more and more complex and gross material realm gets more and more complex, then beyond the etheric energies, astral energies emerge, or emotional sexual energies. And then as life continues to get more complex and the mental realms emerge, then you start to get thought fields or chi fields, or mental fields. And as soul starts to emerge, you get psychic energy fields. And all of these are real energies. They're real matter and real energy. And, of course, in my system, that's a whole spectrum in the upper right quadrant. And meanwhile, in the upper left quadrant, you're getting a whole spectrum of consciousness that goes with those energies. One of the, you know, fundamental tenets of the great wisdom traditions is that every mind has a body, or every consciousness is supported by a state of energy, whether it's a gross energy, a subtle energy, or causal energy. And one of the limitations in our artists, and whether it's certainly in painting, but really anything, is that they tend to be aware of only and depicting or expressing only the gross portion of the spectrum of energies. And they don't know how, or they're not aware of, the subtle portion of the spectrum of energies and the causal portion of energies. And so I think that's what makes, you know, your work have such a fullness to it. People look at it, and then usually the first response, I've showed your work to probably 100 people in my lifetime, and I'd say the response of 90 out of 100 is just gasping. It's just, oh my God, just because it's so astonishing and has such a power of transmission, because in addition to whatever states of consciousness you are attempting to transmit or depict or portray in the upper left, you're also including the spectrum of matter energy that supports those conscious states. And so you're getting this much fuller and much more integral artistic artwork or artifact or production. And again, the whole point about artifacts is when people encounter an artifact, it tends to bring forth in them the same state of consciousness that went into producing it.
There is the cycle, I think, of what sacred art can do.
Uh-huh.
And I use your quadrant map to describe how art can evolve consciousness.
Right.
Basically by taking the vision that is born in the upper left, translating it then into an artifact that is then in the upper right.
Right.
You put it into the meme systems of delivery, however they go. And they're numerous and multifarious. And then you have the resulting discussions, if there is a cultural impact that the icon makes,
right,
then it makes for a new environment for the mind or the psyche of the culture, and which creates a new ground for new visions to emerge. It's a kind of spiralic, an upward spiral that I think art has with its audience. And this seems like the mechanics of the evolution of, certainly of culture,
right,
if not consciousness. And perhaps there's a subtle influence that the art can have on the,
right,
the evolution of consciousness.
Yeah, I think there's a great deal of truth to that. And it just goes, you know, all around the four quadrants, from the initial vision of the artist in the upper left to the creation of the artifact in the upper right. Then the artifact itself is transmitted, shown to other people, and passed around in the lower right. And that brings forth an interpretation or their own experience of what the artist was experiencing when he created it in the lower left. And so you get this sort of, you know, full quadrant creation of manifest artworks. And those actually do then have an impact on the evolution of culture itself. Because the ones that are particularly impactful, the artifacts that somehow speak to people, that somehow say something that they've never heard before or have never seen before. Or as you and I once put it in a discussion, this artwork can show you something that you aren't yet, but that you can become. And that's an extraordinary transformative power that art can have. And so it, in many cases, acts as a so-called pacer of transformation, and can actually pull consciousness of the average person up to at least temporarily a higher state, and in some cases help tip it into a, you know, a higher permanent stage, permanent structure.
I just think it's why people have artwork around them.
Yeah.
To remind them of certain states And that's the power of sacred art, then, that
right.
it has, like that mirroring. It's like our mirror neurons, I guess.
Yeah.
Anything that we use to learn something.
Right.
And we're mirroring somehow the image or putting ourselves in that place. And that was the whole notion of the sacred mirrors, was just to create a kind of a template that the both on those different levels, from the gross and the subtle. And it also goes through sociopolitical and other elements like that. And for all the artwork that I've done, I think of the sacred mirrors as certainly foundational to my entire thing, the 21 of them, but
yeah.
also my most integral work of art, if I could say that, just because its framework includes the evolution of biology and technology, and in a sense has an ascending thrust of this evolutionary thrust of consciousness,
right.
which came really right out of after reading your book on the evolution of consciousness,
right.
Up from Eden,
right.
Which was very impactful to me. But it was right around that time that I was working on the frames of the sacred mirrors. And
right.
so it was, I guess, attempting to create a, quote, philosophical framework that would house the vision.
Right.
And so it was my profound good fortune to know you around that time.
Bless you, my friend. The sacred mirrors is, it's hard to overestimate the power of that work, and I think the importance of it and truly the brilliance of it. One of the things that's so astonishing about it is that it, as much as any work of art that I am aware of, actually has a transformative telos built into it. I mean, its actual purpose is not just to convey a feeling or express a feeling or reproduce something or create an effect in a reader or something. It's to actually take the individual from where they start in the gross, material, unawakened realm and actually move them through the states and structures of consciousness all the way to the enlightened mind. And it does this through, as you said, 21 paintings, each one of which is essentially human size. So each one is about 5.5 feet tall and is just a human being at whatever stage of growth they're at, naked. So you're just seeing the human beings and its form. And it starts out with just the physical body. And so you stand in front of this particular painting, and you mirror it until you feel that you can actually feel the physical body, and in some ways, of course, feel that you are now aware of this physical body, but you are not just that physical body. So it's turning subject into object, which is sort of the fundamental process of transcendence. And then it goes through several panels of just working on the gross body. So it'll go through each of the major organ systems, goes through the circulatory system, and you stand in front of this and you'll see essentially the circulatory system drawn. And you just stand there until you can sort of feel it, reverberate it, and let it go. There's the nervous system, muscular system, digestive system, and so on. So you go through the gross body. And then you move into the first panel that actually starts to include subtle energy. And so now you're standing in front of a painting that's a mirror. It's called Sacred Mirrors. That's a mirror of the earliest beginnings of bioenergy or your subtle energy. And for a lot of people, that in itself is rather striking because they just haven't really had an experience of that kind of subtle energy, or more accurately, because people sort of experience it all the time, but they don't see it. They can't visualize it. They've never actually looked at it or been able to focus it in any way. But here they are standing in front of a painting that is actually a Gray's Anatomy painting of their subtle body. And then there are several of those paintings of the subtle body getting subtler and subtler and subtler until there's really just a energy field which is moving very, very close into causal awareness. And then there's a depiction, the last panel, of a kind of iconic depiction of pure emptiness, of pure radical absolute infinity. And so by the time you're there, you both experienced all of these different bodies that you've had, but you've also had a chance to let them go. You've had a chance to transcend them. And it's a profound effect that it has on people. And as just a concept for an artwork, it's really profound and is one of the very, very few artworks that, as I was saying, includes not just any sort of, you know, upper left state of consciousness, but the whole upper right spectrum of matter energy, from the gross systems to the subtle systems to causal systems to pure emptiness. And it's just a absolutely brilliant piece of work. It's just astonishing.
Well, it's interesting because as I, in my mind, step through them with your descriptions of them, it seems like they're kind of like stepping stones. You know, as you were saying, the subject of one state becomes the object of the next.
Right.
And so as you transcend and transform through each step, takes you out of the body and then back into the body of divinity,
right,
and then back to the quote real world, but with the there's a kind of a sunburst that obliterates a person's head when they stand in front of it. It's a real mirror, so you see the surroundings, but you're kind of missing your head. But the word God, of course, is inscribed in the light in the sun,
right,
center.
Right.
So it's pretty straightforward in what it's suggesting that we all are.
Right.
And what's behind all this. And I think that for me, that's the trick is to try and find a way that people can discover their own divinity.
Right.
And, of course, what would you see in a sacred mirror? But,
right.
You know. And, of course, Allison was the inspiration for the whole thing. She suggested this kind of painting, of the multiple levels of awareness, and then she named the whole series as well, The Sacred Mirror. So
right.
And, of course, then that's become the basis of our chapel or the church project that we're doing, too. So,
right.
So I don't know, without having my friends like yourself and like Allison, of course, it never would have happened. And so I'm eternally grateful.
And I am deeply honored. It's just truly extraordinary.